Suicide?
What? No.
Quiet, everyone. Quiet, please.
No.
Quiet, please.
The voices died away to a rebellious silence as Hawk glared impartially about him.
Let's take this from the beginning. Visage, you found Blackstone's body. Tell us what happened.
Visage glanced briefly at Dormant for support and then began her story.
I wanted to talk to William. There was something about Gaunt's house that made me feel uneasy, and I wanted to be sure he was wearing his amulet of protection.
The one you designed for him?
Yes. Stalker gave me the idea. He'd seen something like it in his travels.
Hawk looked at Stalker, who nodded.
That's right, Captain. They're very common in the East, and with all the recent threats, I thought the amulet might be a good idea. I explained the theory to Visage, and she made the amulet for William.
All right. Go on, Visage.
I went to William's room and knocked on the door. There was no answer, but the door was ajar, so I pushed it open. William was lying on the floor. I ran over to him and checked his breathing, but he was already dead.
Did you touch the knife?
There wasn't any knife. When I found William, there wasn't a mark on him. I saw the wine glass by his hand, and I assumed one of his enemies had poisoned him. I didn't know what to do. I know I should have gone to you, Captain Hawk, but I was afraid to. I was the one who'd found him, and I thought I'd be blamed. I panicked, that's all. I ran back to Graham's room and told him what I'd found. He was kind to me. He said that we'd go and tell you together, and say that we'd both found the body. We were just getting ready to go downstairs when we heard you breaking down William's door, and then, well, we heard about the knife and the locked door, and we didn't know what to think. Graham never doubted me, but in the end we decided to say nothing. I was afraid you wouldn't believe me, and I didn't want Graham to get into trouble by supporting me.
Hawk waited a moment, but Visage said nothing more. He looked at Dormant.
Is this true? You conspired to conceal evidence in a murder case, even though the victim was your friend?
I had to. You and your partner have a reputation for violence. I had to protect Visage. William would have understood.
Let me just check that I've got this straight. Visage found Blackstone's body before Catherine did. Only then the door wasn't locked and there was no knife wound. Catherine finds the body later, brings us up to see it, but fools us into thinking the door is locked when it isn't and never was. And when we find the body, there's a knife in Blackstone's chest.
Fisher looked at Catherine.
I think you've got some explaining to do.
Catherine Blackstone looked at the glass of wine in her hand. She hadn't drunk any.
Captain Hawk was right about the locked door, but I had to do it. When we first left the parlor and went upstairs to change for dinner, I went to visit Edward Bowman in his room. We were lovers. When I returned to my own room, I pushed the door open to find my husband lying dead on the floor, a half-empty wine glass lying by his hand. Like Visage, I thought immediately of poison, but I knew it wasn't murder. It was suicide. A few days ago, I finally confessed to William about my love for Edward. I was going to divorce my husband in order to marry Edward. William threatened to kill himself if I left him.
She looked pleadingly at Hawk and Fisher.
Don't you understand? I couldn't let his death be suicide. The scandal would have destroyed his reputation, everything he'd achieved. People believed in William. He was reform. The truth about me and Edward and William would have been bound to come out, and William's enemies would have used the scandal to undo everything he'd achieved. My life would have been ruined, and Edward's political career would have been at an end. I had to protect my husband's reputation for all our sakes. So I took William's knife from his boot and thrust it into his chest to make it look like a murder. As a martyr, William could still serve the party he founded, particularly if no murderer was ever found. And how could the killer be found when there never was any murder?
There was a long pause. Hightower stirred restlessly.
That is possibly the most ludicrous story I have ever heard.
But true, every word of it. The truth spell is still in force.
So William killed himself?
I don't think so. I can see how it would have looked that way to you, Catherine, but I still believe your husband was murdered. You see, the wine glass has mysteriously disappeared from Blackstone's room.
The wine wasn't poisoned, I checked. I even tasted it myself.
It still has to be significant, or it wouldn't have been taken. But we can come back to that later. Catherine, Is there anything else about your husband's death that you haven't told us? Anything else that you've concealed from us?
No, there's nothing else. I didn't kill my husband, and I didn't kill Edward.
Hawk thought a moment and then turned to look at Visage.
Did you kill Blackstone and Bowman?
No. William was dead when I found him, and I don't know anything about what happened to Edward. Although...
Yes?
Visage frowned.
There was a funny smell on the landing.
Hawk waited again, but she said nothing more. He turned to face Lord Hightower.
My lord.
I object to this whole proceeding.
Just answer the questions, my lord. Did you kill Blackstone and Bowman?
No, I did not.
Hawk looked at him thoughtfully. He couldn't think of any more specific questions to ask Lord Hightower, and he had a strong feeling that what answers he did get would be as unhelpful as Hightower could make them. He could tell the man was edgy about something. It was plain in his face and his manner, but there was nothing he could do about it for the moment. If he did put the pressure on and found nothing to justify his actions... Hawk turned to Lady Hightower.
My lady, did you kill Blackstone and Bowman?
No.
Hawk looked at her for a moment, but her level eyes and the tight line of her mouth made it clear that he wasn't going to get anywhere with her either. Hawk scowled. The truth spell had seemed like such a good idea at the time. He turned to Stalker.
Sir Stalker, did you kill Blackstone and Bowman?
No.
Hawk sat back in his chair and frowned thoughtfully. He'd asked everybody outright, and each had denied being the murderer. That was impossible. One of them had to be the killer, so one of them must be lying. But since the truth spell was still in force, they couldn't be lying. He thought hard. He was missing something again. He could feel it.
Sir Stalker.
Yes, Captain Hawk.
Whoever the killer is, he must have extensive knowledge of this house to be able to move about it as freely as he has. Gaunt told me earlier that you had been very insistent in your attempts to buy this house. Perhaps you could tell me why this house is so important to you.
I can assure you my reasons have nothing to do with killing Blackstone and Bowman.
Please answer the question, Sir Stalker.
This used to be my home. I was born here.
Everyone gaped at him. Dormant got his breath back first.
You mean you're actually a Defaria? I thought they were all dead.
They are. I'm the last now, and I prefer to use the name I made for myself. I ran away from home when I was 14. My family had become corrupt, and I couldn't stand it any longer. But this house is still my home, and I want it.
Hawk thought furiously. He and Fisher had only lived in Haven a few years, but he'd heard of the Defarriers. Everybody had. They were an arrogant and evil family, sexually perverse and heavily involved with black magics of the foulest kind. It took a long time to prove anything against them. They were, after all, an old, established family with friends in high places. But then children began to disappear. The guard finally forced their way into the Defarrier house, and what they found there shocked even the hardest guards. 3 Defarriers were hanged for murder, and 2 more were torn to pieces in the streets while trying to escape. The others all died in prison one way or another. And this was the family that produced the legendary Adam Stalker, hero and avenger of evil.
Is that all? I really don't have anything else I wish to say.
Yes, I think I'm finished now. I don't have any more questions.
You may not, but I do.
He looked about him.
There are 2 people here who haven't been questioned under the truth spell. Don't any of you find it suspicious that these murders only began after Hawk and Fisher entered this house?
Oh, come on.
Wait just a minute. We all know William had enemies. What better way to get to him than by the very guards who were supposed to be defending him? Who'd ever suspect them?
That's ridiculous.
Is it? We've all had to answer under the truth spell. Why shouldn't you?
Very well. Hawk, did you kill Blackstone and Bowman?
No, I didn't. Isabel, did you kill Blackstone and Bowman?
No.
Well, that was a waste of a good truth spell.
Right. We're no nearer finding the murderer than when we started.
It wasn't a complete waste. At least now we know how Blackstone died.
And we know the murderer isn't one of us.
There's no one else in this house. There can't be. One of us has to be the killer.
You heard the answers. Everyone here denied being the murderer.
Gaunt frowned unhappily.
Maybe you didn't word the questions correctly.
Grabbing at straws.
If the murderer isn't one of us, then he must be hiding somewhere in the house. It's the only explanation.
There's no one else here. Hawk and I have been through every room, and there isn't a hiding place we haven't checked.
There's no one here but us.
Exactly. My wards are up and secure. No one could have got in without my knowing about it. And they certainly couldn't have moved about the house without setting off a dozen security spells. There can't be anyone else here.
All right, then. Maybe the truth spell was defective. That's the only other answer I can see.
I am not in the habit of casting defective spells. My truth spell was effective while it lasted.
While it lasted? You mean it's over? I thought we had 25 minutes.
The more people involved, the greater the strain on the spell. It's over now.
Can you cast another?
Certainly. But not for another 24 hours.
Great. Just great.
All right, what do we do now?
There is one place we didn't check as thoroughly as the others. The kitchen.
You saw for yourself. There wasn't anywhere to hide.
I think we ought to check it anyway. Just to be sure.
Hawk looked at Gaunt, who shrugged. Hawk got to his feet.
All right, Fisher, let's take another look.
She nodded and got to her feet. Hawk glared round at the guests.
Everyone else stay here. That's an order. I don't want anyone leaving this room till we get back. Come on, Fisher.
They left the parlor and went out into the hall, closing the door behind them. Gaunt and his guests sat in silence, lost in their own thoughts. After a while, Visage stirred uncomfortably in her chair, then rose suddenly to her feet.
I really think we should stay here. It would be safer.
I have to go to the bathroom. And no, I can't wait.
I don't think you should go off on your own.
Quite right.
He turned to his wife.
Why don't you and I go up with her, just to keep her company, so to speak?
Of course. You don't mind, do you, dear?
Visage smiled and shook her head.
I think I'd feel a lot safer knowing I wasn't on my own.
Don't be too long. We don't want to upset Captain Hawk, do we?
Lord and Lady Hightower got to their feet and followed Visage out of the parlor, closing the door behind them. Dormant stirred uncertainly in his chair. He would have liked to go with her, too, to be sure she was safe, but the poor girl wouldn't want a crowd following her to the toilet. Besides, the Hightowers would look after her. He sank back in his chair and tried to think about something else. Dormant felt a little better now that Hawk and Fisher knew about the evidence he'd been concealing, even if it didn't seem to have helped much. He glanced surreptitiously at Catherine. How could she have done it? To kneel beside her dead husband and drive his own dagger into his chest. Dormant shuddered.
The wine glass worries me. If the wine wasn't poisoned...
It wasn't. I tasted some myself.
The wine!
Everyone looked at her. Catherine looked into the empty fireplace, frowning.
Oh, William didn't drink much, even at parties. It was a rule of his. He'd already told me he'd had enough for one evening. But he had a fresh glass of wine in his hand when he went upstairs to change. So who gave him that glass?
I don't remember. I wasn't really watching.
He looked at the others, and they all shook their heads.
I'm sure I saw who it was. Oh, I just can't remember. I can't.
Take it easy. It'll come to you if you don't try and force it.
Probably not that important anyway.
Hawk and Fisher checked the kitchen thoroughly from top to bottom and found nothing and no one. There were no hidden passages, no hiding places, and nothing that looked even remotely suspicious. Not that they'd expected to find anything. The two just needed an excuse to go off on their own so that they could talk in private. They leaned back against the sink and looked gloomily about them.
Oh, Hightower was right. Much as I hate to admit it, the truth spell didn't get us anywhere. The new angle on Blackstone's death is all very interesting, but we're still no nearer finding his killer.
Maybe. And maybe not. I wouldn't know a clue if I fell over it, but I know a guilty face when I see one. Hightower's hiding something. He was jumpy as hell when he first discovered we were all stuck here for the night, and he was almost in a panic at the thought of a truth spell. There was something he didn't want to talk about.
You didn't ask him many questions.
He wouldn't have answered them if I had.
We could have leaned on him.
Do you honestly think we can make Lord Roderick Hightower say one damn thing he didn't want to?
Fisher smiled reluctantly.
I see your point. Well, besides, there's no actual evidence that whatever's worrying him has anything to do with the murders. Old soldiers and politicians always have something to hide. After all, you asked him if he killed Blackstone and Bowman, and he said no. Didn't even hesitate.
Hawk scowled, thinking.
How do we know Gaunt actually cast a truth spell? Maybe... No. No, it worked all right. I tested it myself.
Maybe he only cast it on you.
Maybe. And maybe we're both getting paranoid.
Well, there is that.
Let's get back to the parlor. I don't like leaving them alone too long. I'll hit them with some more questions. Try and break someone's story. Hightower's hiding something. I'd stake my career on it.
We already did.
Visage waited alone on the landing, not far from the bathroom door. The Lady Elaine was taking her turn in the bathroom, while Lord Roderick went back to his room to change into more suitable clothes. Just one lamp lit the landing, not enough to penetrate the shadows. Visage glanced nervously about her. She wished the Lord and Lady would hurry up. She wrapped her arms around her. The house was still full of the sweltering summer heat, but Visage kept finding cold spots. She bit her lip and frowned unhappily. She didn't like Gaunt's house. She didn't like it from the moment she first crossed the threshold. But now she knew why. The Defarriers might be dead and gone, but their house still held dark memories locked into its stone and timber. It was hard to think of a man like Stalker being a Defarrier, but she didn't doubt it for a minute. Despite all the songs and legends, and even though he was always studiously polite to her, she never warmed to him. Visage never understood what William saw in him. She'd never liked Stalker. He had cold eyes. Visage looked along the landing to William's door. Poor William. He held such hopes, such dreams. And poor Edward died right here on the landing at the top of the stairs. She looked at the ragged bloodstains on the carpet and then looked away. She felt sorry for Edward. Now he was gone. She shouldn't have said those awful things about him. They were all true, but she shouldn't have said them. She heard footsteps behind her and turned, smiling, expecting to see Lord Roderick. Her smile faltered.
I'm sorry, but you could tell them what I am. I can't allow that. I'm sorry, Visage.
Hawk and Fisher pounded up the stairs to the landing, cold steel in their hands. Hawk had a sick feeling they were going to be too late again.
Not another one. Please, not another one.
He stopped suddenly at the top of the stairs, and Fisher bumped into him from behind. The witch Visage lay face down in the middle of the landing. Hawk moved cautiously forward, Fisher at his side. They looked quickly about them, but there was no sign of the attacker. Hawk knelt down beside Visage while Fisher stood guard. There was blood all around the witch's body. Hawk took a handful of her hair and gently lifted her head. Visage's eyes were wide and staring. Her throat had been torn out. Hawk lowered her face back onto the bloody floor.
And that's three. We've lost another one.
You should be getting used to that by now.
Hawk and Fisher straightened up quickly to find Hightower watching them from the door of his room. Hawk opened his mouth to say something and then stopped as he heard a faint creaking sound behind him. He and Fisher spun around, weapons at the ready, to find Lady Elaine watching from the bathroom door. Her face was pale and shocked. She moved slowly forward to stand with her husband, her eyes never leaving Visage's body.
What the hell were you all doing up here? I told you to stay in the damn parlor!
The witch had to go to the bathroom. We came with her to protect her.
Didn't do a very good job now, did you?
Where were you when Visage died?
I was in the bathroom.
I was in my room, changing.
Hawk stared at them incredulously.
You left her out here on her own?
It was only for a moment.
There were footsteps behind them, and Dormant came forward to kneel beside Visage's body. He reached out a hand to touch her face, and his fingers came back flecked with blood.
She was so frightened. I told her there was nothing to worry about. I told her I'd look after her, and she trusted me.
Hawk looked past Dormant. Gaunt and Stalker were standing together at the top of the stairs. Hawk glared about him.
Where the hell were you all? What took you so long to get here?
Nobody said anything. They looked away rather than meet his gaze, but Hawk had already seen the answer in their faces. No one had wanted to be first on the scene for fear of being accused.
You and your partner have a reputation for violence.
Did any of you see anything? Did anyone hear anything?
Only her screams. I knew we shouldn't have let her go, but we all thought she'd be safe with the Hightowers.
You left her alone!
Dormant raised his head slowly and looked at Lord Hightower.
She was afraid, and you went off and left her alone in the dark. You bastard!
Dormant threw himself at Hightower, and they fell heavily to the floor. Dormant flailed away wildly with his fists, and then got his hands around Hightower's throat. Lord Roderick was tearing at Dormant's hands. Hawk started forward, and then Hightower braced himself and flung Dormant away. He flew backwards and slammed up against the opposite wall. Hawk and Fisher got to him before he could go after Hightower again.
That's enough! I know how you feel, but that's enough.
Dormant's whole body shook from the force of the racking sobs. Fisher patted him on the shoulder, but he didn't even feel it. Hawk shook his head slowly.
What a mess.
Hightower got to his feet, with his wife's help, and fingered his throat gingerly.
Well, aren't you going to arrest him? He assaulted me. I have witnesses.
Shut your face. He only beat me to it by a couple of seconds.
He turned his back on Hightower, and then looked around him.
Wait a minute. Where's Catherine?
Everyone looked around, but she was nowhere to be seen.
She was with us in the parlor when we heard the screams. I thought she was right behind us.
Damn!
Hawk turned and ran back down the stairs, Fisher close behind him. He charged down the hall, kicked open the parlor door, skidding to a halt just inside the door. Catherine Blackstone sat in her chair by the empty fireplace, just as he'd last seen her. Only now, there was a knife sunk deep into her chest, the hilt protruding between her breasts. The front of her dress was soaked with blood, her head was sunk forward, and her staring eyes saw nothing, nothing at all.
Damn, I don't believe this.
Hawk glared furiously about him, but there was no trace of any attacker. Fisher moved forward and bent over Catherine. She checked briefly for a pulse and then looked back at Hawk and shook her head. A clatter of feet approached in the hall and Hawk turned quickly to face the door.
That's close enough. Stand where you are.
Gaunt and his guests stumbled to a halt as they took in the gleaming steel axe held at the ready in Hawk's hand.
What is it? What's happened?
Catherine Blackstone is dead. Murdered. I want all of you to come into the parlor slowly and in single file, keeping your hands where I can see them.
Who the hell do you think you're talking to?
A murderer! Now shut up and move!
Lady Elaine took in his cold, determined face and did as she was told. The others followed her into the parlor, giving Hawk and his axe as wide a berth as possible. Hawk backed slowly away as they filed into the parlor.
She can't have been killed. It's just not possible.
Is that right? I suppose she committed suicide too?
But how could the killer have got down from the landing without anyone seeing him? No one passed us on the stairs, and there's no other way down. Catherine was perfectly all right when we went running out of the parlor to investigate Visage's screams.
Nevertheless, she's dead.
Maybe she did commit suicide. Her husband and her lover had both been killed.
No, Catherine wasn't like that. She was a fighter, always had been. Once she got over the shock of Edward's death, all she could think of was revenge. She'd already started working on how William could have been killed.
He broke off and looked a little confused. He put a hand to his forehead and swayed slightly on his feet.
Do you think I could sit down, Captain Hawk? I feel a little upset.
All right. Everybody find a chair and sit down, but keep your hands in plain sight. Sir Stalker, lay your sword down on the floor by your feet, and don't touch it again until I tell you to.
Stalker studied him carefully a moment, and then nodded and followed Hawk's instructions. Fisher watched unblinkingly until Stalker was sitting in his chair with his sword at his feet, and only then lowered her sword. Stalker didn't even look in her direction. Soon everyone except Hawk and Fisher had found themselves a chair. The two guards stood on either side of Catherine Blackstone.
All right. Let me see if I've got this straight. Lord and Lady Hightower are up on the landing with Visage. Stalker, Gaunt, Dormant, and Catherine were all down here in the parlor. The Lady Elaine went into the bathroom, Lord Hightower went into his bedroom, and Visage was left alone on the landing. Shortly afterwards, she was attacked and killed. Fisher and I heard her screams just as we were leaving the kitchen. We ran up the stairs to find Visage already dead and her attacker gone. Lord and Lady Hightower came out onto the landing to see what had happened, and those in the parlor came running out into the hall. While they were leaving the parlor, or shortly afterward, Catherine was stabbed to death.
We must have missed something. Put like that, the two murders couldn't have happened. It just wasn't possible.
Yeah, it has to be possible.
Hawk hefted his axe angrily.
I don't believe this. Four people have been murdered in a house full of witnesses and nobody sees anything?
He glared around at Gaunt and his guests and then turned disgustedly away to look at Catherine. He frowned slightly. He thought at first she might have been stabbed somewhere else and then brought back and dumped in her chair. But while the front of her dress was soaked with blood, there were no bloodstains to be seen anywhere else. So the killer must have struck no more than a few seconds after the others left the parlor. Hawk scowled. It was impossible. Everyone had been so intent on what was happening on the landing that they wouldn't have noticed someone sneaking into the parlor. But how the hell did the killer get down from the landing to the hall? Hawk shook his head and leaned over Catherine to get a closer look at the dagger that killed her. The hilt jutted obscenely from between her breasts. Hawk noted that the blow had been struck with professional skill, just under the sternum and straight into the heart. The hilt itself was a standard metal grip wrapped in leather with nothing to distinguish it from a thousand others just like it. Hawk straightened up and turned reluctantly back to the sorcerer and his guests.
Some of you must have seen something, even if you don't recognize it. Have any of you seen or heard anything out of the ordinary, no matter how silly or trivial it may sound?
They all looked at each other, and then Stalker stirred thoughtfully.
It could be nothing, but up on the landing I could have sworn I smelt something.
You smelt something? What did it smell like?
I don't know. It was a musky animal smell.
Visage said she smelled something earlier on, just after Bowman's death, but she wasn't sure what it was.
I'm not sure either, but it was definitely some kind of animal.
Like a wolf?
Stalker looked at him.
Yes. Like a wolf.
This is ridiculous. There are no wolves in Haven. And anyway, how could a wolf have got into my house, past all my wards and defenses?
Quite simply, you invited him in.
Oh my god, a werewolf.
Yes, a shapeshifter. It all makes sense now, if you think about it. What kind of murderer kills sometimes with a knife and sometimes like a wild animal? A man who is sometimes a wolf. A werewolf.
And there's a full moon tonight.
Dormant looked at Hawk.
You've had some experience in tracking down werewolves, haven't you?
Experience? Oh, yes. Hawk knows all about werewolves, don't you, Captain? How many this time, Captain? How many more of us are going to die because of your incompetence?
His wife put a gentle hand on his arm, and he subsided reluctantly, still glaring at Hawk.
I don't understand. Are you seriously suggesting that one of us is a werewolf?
Yes. It's the only answer that fits.
They all looked at each other, as though expecting to see telltale fur, fangs, and claws. Dormant looked at Gaunt.
Can't your magic tell you which one of us is the werewolf?
Gaunt stirred uncomfortably.
Not really. There are such spells, but I'm rather out of my field.
There are other means of detecting a werewolf.
Of course. Wolfsbane, for example. A lycanthrope should react very strongly to wolfsbane.
I was thinking more of silver. Do you have any silver weapons in the house, Sir Sorcerer?
There's a silver dagger somewhere in my laboratory. At least there used to be. I haven't used it in a long time.
All right. Go and look for it. No, wait a minute. I don't want anyone going off on their own. Fisher and I will come with you.
No, I don't trust you, Hawk. You were involved with the werewolf before. How do we know you didn't get bitten and infected with the werewolf's curse?
Oh, that's crazy. Hawk's no werewolf.
Take it easy. Lord Hightower is right. Until we can prove otherwise, no one is above suspicion. Absolutely no one.
Hightower stiffened slightly.
Are you suggesting...
Why not? Anyone can become a werewolf.
How dare you? You of all people should remember what good cause I have to hate shapeshifters.
For a moment, nobody said anything.
Why don't you come with me, Rod? I'm sure I'll feel a lot safer with an old soldier like you along to watch my back.
Of course. You come along too, Elaine. You'll be safer with us.
Lady Elaine nodded. She and her husband followed Gaunt out of the parlor and into the hall.
A werewolf. I never really believed in such creatures.
I wasn't sure I believed in vampires until I met one.
Werewolves are magical creatures, and there's only one of us left with magical abilities. Interesting that, isn't it?
Are you suggesting that Gaunt...
Why not? I never did trust sorcerers. You heard how those people died in the Hook, didn't you?
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other thoughtfully. Fisher raised an eyebrow, and Hawk shrugged slightly. He knew she was thinking of the succubus. Hawk tried to consider the point dispassionately. He'd assumed the succubus responsible for the deaths in the Hook, but they could just as easily have been the result of a werewolf on a killing spree. And Gaunt was an alchemist. He knew about poisons. They only had his word that Blackstone's wine hadn't been poisoned. In fact, if the sorcerer was a werewolf, he could probably have tasted poisoned wine and not taken any harm from it. And perhaps most important of all, Gaunt had been one of the last people in the parlor with Catherine. Hawk scowled. It all made a kind of sense. He glanced at the closed parlor door and wondered if he should go after them. No, better not. Not yet, anyway. Hightower could look after himself, and it wasn't as if there was any real proof against Gaunt.
Damn.
Hawk sat back in his chair and cursed his indecision. He was a guard, and he couldn't make a move without some kind of proof. Lord and Lady Hightower waited impatiently in the library while Gaunt searched his laboratory for the silver dagger. He politely but firmly refused to let them enter the laboratory with him. Lady Elaine understood. All men like to have one room they could think of as their own, a private den they could retreat to when the world got a little too hard to cope with. Lady Elaine watched her husband pacing up and down and wished she could say something to calm him. She'd never seen him so worried before. It was the werewolf, of course. Ever since Paul's death, Roderick had been obsessed with finding the creatures and making them pay in blood. Despite his endless hunts, he found but one, and that one escaped after killing three of his men. Now he finally had the chance to come face to face with a werewolf, and the odds were it was going to be one of his friends. No wonder he was torn. Elaine felt some of the pressure herself. The unending heat oppressed her. She jumped at every sudden noise. She was tired and her muscles ached, but she couldn't relax even for a minute. It wasn't just the deaths. They were upsetting, but it was the horrid feeling of helplessness that disturbed her most. No matter what anyone said or did, no matter what theories they came up with, the people kept dying. No wonder her head ached unmercifully and Roderick's temper had been shortening by the minute. Lady Elaine sat down in one of the chairs. She tried to look calm and relaxed in the hope that Roderick would follow her example, but he didn't. Elaine hoped they'd got it right this time and that the killer really was a werewolf. Roderick needed so badly to kill a werewolf. Perhaps when he saw the creature lying dead and broken at his feet, he'd be able to forget about Paul's death and start thinking about his own life again. Perhaps. Roderick suddenly stopped pacing and stood still. His shoulders were hunched and his head was bowed, and Elaine could see a faint sheen of sweat on his face. His hands were clenched into fists.
Why doesn't he hurry up? What's taking him so long?
It's only been a few minutes, my dear. Give the man time.
It's hot.
Hightower didn't look at her, didn't even seem to have heard her.
So damned hot. And close. I can't stand it. The rooms are all too small.
Rod?
I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out of this place.
Elaine rose to her feet and moved quickly over to take his arm.
Rod!
Roderick looked at her frowningly, as though he knew her face but couldn't quite place it. And then recognition moved slowly in his eyes, and he reached across to gently pat her hand on his arm.
I'm sorry, my dear. It's the heat and the waiting. I hate being cooped up in here, in this house.
It's only until the morning, dear. And then the spell will be gone and we can leave.
I don't think I can wait that long.
Roderick looked at her for a long moment, his eyes tender but strangely distant.
Elaine, my dear, whatever happens, I love you. Never doubt it.
And I love you, Rod. But don't talk anymore. It's just the heat upsetting you.
No, it's not just the heat.
His face twisted suddenly and his eyes squeezed shut. He bent sharply forward and wrapped his arms around himself. Elaine grabbed him by the shoulders to stop him from falling.
Rod, what is it? Do you have a pain?
He pushed her away from him and she staggered back a step. Hightower swayed from side to side, bent almost double.
Get out of here! Get away from me, please!
Rod, what's the matter?
It hurts! It hurts, Elaine! The moonlight's in my mind! Run, Elaine, run!
No! I can't leave you like this, Rod!
And then he turned his shaggy head and looked at her. Elaine's eyes widened and her throat went dry. The air was heavy with the smell of musk and hair. Elaine turned to run. The werewolf caught her long before she got to the door. In the parlor, Stalker poured himself another glass of wine and looked thoughtfully at the clock on the mantelpiece.
They're taking their time, aren't they? How long does it take to find one dagger and some herbs in a jar?
Hawk nodded slowly.
Not this long. We'll give them a few more minutes, but if they're not back then, I think we'd better go and take a look for ourselves.
Stalker nodded and sipped at his wine. Fisher continued to pace up and down before the closed parlor door. Hawk smiled slightly. Fisher never cared much for waiting. Doramunset slumped in a chair, as far away from Catherine as he could get. His hands were clasped tightly together in his lap, and every now and again he would look quickly at the tablecloth covering Catherine's body and then look away. Hawk frowned. Doramunt wasn't holding together too well.
I can't really blame him. This is getting to everyone, and the damn night won't end. Someone's bound to crack.
Hawk looked at the clock on the mantelpiece and chewed worriedly at his lower lip. Gaunt was taking too long.
All right, that's it. Let's go and find out what the hell's happening. Everyone stick together. No one is to go off on their own, no matter what.
Stalker picked up his sword before getting to his feet. Hawk thought to say something and then decided against it. If an attack came, he was going to need Stalker's expertise with a sword to back him up. Hawk headed for the door, and Fisher opened it for him. He smiled slightly as he saw her draw her sword. He drew his axe and stepped cautiously out into the hall. The library door stood slightly ajar, and the hall was empty. Hawk crossed over to the library, the others close behind him. He pushed the library door open. Lady Elaine Hightower lay in a crumpled heap on the floor. Her throat had been torn out. There was no sign of Gaunt or Roderick. Hawk moved cautiously forward into the library, glaring about him. Fisher moved silently at his side, the lamplight shining golden on her sword blade. Stalker and Dormant moved quickly in behind them. Hawk moved over to the laboratory door and felt his hackles rise as he realized the door was standing slightly ajar. Gaunt would never have left that door open for any reason. Hawk ran forward, kicked the door open, and burst into the laboratory. The werewolf threw himself at the succubus's throat, and they fell sprawling to the floor, snarling and clawing. Hawk looked quickly at the tentacle on the far side of the room. Its blue chalk lines were smudged and broken. Gaunt lay unmoving on the floor, not far away. Hawk hurried over to crouch beside him, keeping a careful eye on the werewolf and the succubus as they raged back and forth across the laboratory. Fisher and Stalker stood together in the doorway, swords in hand, guarding the only exit. Doramunt watched wide-eyed from behind them. The succubus tore at the werewolf with her clawed hands. Long rents appeared in the werewolf's sides, only to close again in a matter of seconds. The succubus's eyes blazed with a sudden golden light, and flames roared up around the werewolf, but the sorcerous fire couldn't consume him. He threw himself at her again, and his fangs and claws left bloody furrows on her perfect skin. The succubus's head snapped forward, and she sank her teeth into the werewolf's throat. He flung her away. They quickly regained their balance and circled each other warily. Fisher lifted her sword and started forward from the doorway, but Hawk waved her back. Cold steel was no defense against a werewolf, let alone an enraged succubus.
No.
Gaunt stirred slowly beside him, and Hawk took the sorcerer by the shoulder and turned him over. He had a few nasty cuts and bruises, but otherwise looked unharmed. Hawk shook him roughly. The sorcerer tried to sit up, and Hawk turned just in time to see the werewolf rip out the throat of the succubus with one savage twist of his jaws. Horribly, the succubus didn't die. She stood where she was, backed up against the laboratory wall, and blood ran down her chest in a steady stream. The werewolf readied itself to hit her again, and she was helpless to prevent it. She stood gasping for air, no longer capable of living, but unable to die.
Succubus!
The demon slumped forward and fell lifeless to the floor. The werewolf sniffed warily at the unmoving body and then turned to snarl at Fisher and Stalker, still blocking the only door.
I had to do it. She was bound to me. She couldn't die until I let her go. I couldn't bear to lose her, but I couldn't let her suffer.
Tears ran down his face, but he didn't seem to notice them. Hawk grabbed him by the arm and dragged him to his feet.
The silver dagger. Did you find the silver dagger?
No, not yet.
You have to find it. We'll try and keep the beast occupied.
Yes, the dagger. I'll kill the creature.
His eyes suddenly focused and he was back in control of himself. He looked hard at the werewolf crouched beside the dead succubus.
Who is that? Who wore the mark of the beast?
Hightower. Lord Roderick Hightower. I recognize what's left of his clothes.
Gaunt nodded slowly and moved away to start searching through the drawers of a nearby table. The werewolf turned his shaggy head to watch Gaunt, but made no move to attack him. The werewolf's fur was matted with drying blood, and his claws and teeth had a crimson sheen.
How? How can Roderick be the werewolf? He hates the creatures. One of them killed his son.
Exactly. He hated them so much, he spent all his time leading expeditions to track them down and kill them. In the end, it became an obsession with him. That's why the army made him resign. As I understand it, he only found one werewolf. But it seems one was enough. The creature must have bitten him.
And whoever feels a werewolf's bite shall become a wolf when the moon is bright. Ugh, poor bastard.
Ironic.
Stalker hefted his sword.
But why did Roderick want to kill all those people? They were his friends.
Werewolves kill because they have to. When the moon is full, the killing rage fills their mind until there's nothing left but wolf. God knows how Hightower managed to hide it this long. Maybe he just went off and locked himself up somewhere safe until the full moon was past and his madness was over.
And then we trapped him here, with a fresh supply of victims and no way out.
It's not your fault. You couldn't have known. In the meantime, it's up to us to stop him before he kills again.
Stop him? There's only one thing that will stop a werewolf, and Gaunt isn't even sure he's got one. The best we can hope to do is slow the beast down.
Let me talk to him. I've known Roderick on and off for more than 20 years. Maybe he'll listen to me.
He lowered his sword and stepped forward. The werewolf crouched before him, watching him unblinkingly. As Stalker approached, the beast stood on two legs, like a man, wrapped in the tatters of a man's clothing. But his stance wasn't in any way human. His body was long, wiry, and covered with thick, bristly hair. The hands were elongated paws with long, curved claws. The narrow, tapering muzzle was full of teeth. Blood dripped from the grinning jaws. The werewolf's eyes were a startling blue, but there was nothing human in their unwavering gaze. Stalker stopped where he was.
Why didn't you come to me? I would have helped you, Rod. I'd have found someone who could take the curse away from you.
The werewolf slowly padded forward, his hands flexed eagerly.
He can't hear you. There's nothing left now but the beast.
The werewolf sprang forward, and Stalker met him with his sword. The long steel blade cut into the werewolf's chest and out again, and didn't even slow him down. He knocked Stalker to the ground and dashed the sword from his hand. Stalker grabbed the werewolf by the throat with both hands and fought to keep the grinning jaws away from his throat. The werewolf's quick, panting breath slapped against his face, thick with the stench of fresh blood and rotting meat. Fisher stepped forward and thrust her sword through the werewolf's ribs. Fisher pulled back her sword for another thrust.
Damn!
The wound healed itself in seconds. Hawk moved in and swung his axe double-handed. The heavy blade sank deep into the werewolf's shoulder, smashing the collarbone. The werewolf tried to pull away, but Stalker held on grimly, digging his fingers into the beast's throat. Fisher cut at the werewolf again and again. The beast sank his claws into Stalker's chest. Huck pulled out his axe for another blow, and the werewolf broke Stalker's hold and jumped back out of range. A jagged wound showed clearly in the beast's shoulder, but it didn't bleed. The guards and the warrior watched as the broken bones re-knit themselves. Then the wound closed and was gone.
We're not going to stop him. There's not a damn thing we can do to stop him.
The werewolf lowered his shaggy head. Hawk and Fisher braced themselves, weapons at the ready. Stalker looked to where he dropped his sword, but it was too far away. The werewolf leapt for Stalker's throat. Stalker ducked under the werewolf's leap and gutted the beast with a dagger he'd snatched from his boot at the last moment. The werewolf crashed heavily to the floor. He lay helpless for a moment as the wound healed, and Stalker dropped his dagger, leaned over the beast, and taking a hold of the tail and neck, lifted the werewolf over his head. The beast kicked and struggled, couldn't break free. Stalker held it there. He felt his muscles creaking and groaning under the strain. Sweat ran down his face with the effort, but he wouldn't let the beast go. As long as the werewolf couldn't reach anyone, he was harmless. Pain ran jaggedly through Stalker's arms and chest from the weight of the beast. He wouldn't give in. Hawk and Fisher watched in awe. This was the Stalker they'd heard about, the legendary hero who'd never known defeat. And then Gaunt stepped forward, a silver dagger gleaming in his hand. Stalker slammed the werewolf to the floor with the last of his strength. The impact stunned the werewolf for a moment. Gaunt plunged the silver dagger into the beast's chest, just under the breastbone. Gaunt and Stalker stepped quickly back as the werewolf writhed and twisted on the laboratory floor. He scrabbled forward a few feet. The werewolf lay still and closed his eyes. The wolf shape stirred and shifted. The fur and fangs and claws slowly disappeared, and bones creaked softly as their shape changed. When it was over, Lord Roderick Hightower lay still on the floor, curled around the silver dagger embedded in his heart. Gaunt knelt down beside him.
Why didn't you tell us, Rod? We were your friends. We'd have found some way to help you.
Hightower opened his eyes and looked at the sorcerer. He smiled slightly, and there was blood on his lips.
I liked being a wolf. Felt young again. Is Elaine dead?
Yes. You killed her.
My poor Elaine. I could never tell her.
You should have told us, Rod.
Hightower raised an eyebrow tiredly.
You should have told us about your succubus. But you didn't. We all have our secrets, Gaunt. Some of them are just easier to live with than others.
Gaunt nodded slowly.
Why did you kill William, Rod?
I didn't.
Gaunt slowly straightened up and looked at the others.
I don't understand. Why should he lie about it? He knew he was dying.
He didn't lie.
The surviving group looked at him sharply, and he smiled grimly.
All along, I've been saying this case didn't make sense, and I was right. The evidence didn't tie together because there wasn't just one murderer. There were two.
The parlor seemed somehow larger now there were so few people left to sit in it. The chair with Catherine's body had been pushed to the rear of the room. The still-sheeted figure sat slumped in its chair like a sleeping ghost. The two guards and their suspects sat in a rough semicircle around the empty fireplace. They sat in silence, looking at each other with tired, suspicious eyes. Hawk and Fisher sat side by side. Hawk sat scowling thoughtfully, while Fisher glared at everyone impartially, her sword resting across her knees. Dorimant sat on the edge of his chair, mopping at his face with a handkerchief. The heat was worse, if anything, and the parlor was almost unbearably close and stuffy. Gaunt sat stiffly in his chair, staring at nothing. He hadn't said a word since they left the laboratory. Stalker handed him a glass of wine, and the sorcerer looked at it dully. Stalker had to coax him into taking the first sip, but after that, Gaunt carried on drinking mechanically until the glass was empty. Stalker noted Hawk's disapproving frown and leaned forward conspiratorially.
Don't worry. The wine contains a strong sedative. Let him sleep off the shock. It's the best thing for him.
You must be very skilled at sleight of hand, Sir Stalker. I didn't see you drop anything into his wine.
I didn't. It's a variation on my transformation trick with the alcohol. Only this time I used the spell to change some of the wine into a sedative. Simple, but effective.
Hawk nodded thoughtfully, and Stalker sank back as his chair groaned in protest. He glanced at the clock on the mantelpiece and then looked sharply at Hawk.
Your time's nearly up, Captain. In just under half an hour, it will be dawn, and the isolation spell will collapse. If Hightower was telling the truth, you don't have much time left to find your second killer.
I don't need any more time. I know who the second murderer is.
The small group looked at him sharply, including Fisher.
Are you sure, Hawk? We can't afford to be wrong.
I'm sure. Everything's finally fallen into place. I'd pretty much worked out the who and why a while back, but I still couldn't work out how it had been done. And without that, I couldn't make an accusation.
But now you've got it?
Yeah.
Hawk looked unhurriedly around him, letting the tension build. Stalker watched with interest, his hand resting on the sword at his side. Dorimant sat perched right on the edge of his chair, eagerly leaning forward. Gaunt watched quietly, sitting slumped in his chair, his eyes already drooping from the sedative Stalker gave him. Fisher glared at him impatiently, and Hawk decided he'd better make a start.
Let me recap a little to begin with. This has been a complicated case, made even more so because there were two killers, working separately, with completely unconnected motives. That's why the truth spell didn't work. I asked everyone if they killed Blackstone and Bowman. And of course, each killer could truthfully say no. They'd only killed one man, not both. The first killer was, of course, Lord Roderick Hightower. Under the influence of the full moon, his killer's rage drove him to become a wolf and kill Edward Bowman. The choice of victim was pure chance. If Hightower hadn't found Bowman on the landing, he would undoubtedly have found someone else to attack. He killed his second victim, the witch Visage, while his wife was out of sight in the bathroom, and Visage was left alone on the landing. I think he probably killed her deliberately. She'd smelt something strange on the landing after Bowman's murder, and given time, she might have been able to identify what it was. So Hightower killed her while he had the chance. By the time he killed his wife, the Lady Elaine, the werewolf in him was too strong to be denied. The killing rage must have been overpowering. It's a wonder he was able to fight it off and stay human as long as he did. But while all this was going on, another killer was moving among us. The man who killed William Blackstone and his wife, Catherine. Again, the case was made more complicated by outside factors. To begin with, we were distracted by the door having been apparently locked from the inside. Once Catherine admitted her part in the deception and in the stabbing of the dead body to mislead us as to the cause of death, the situation grew a little clearer. The wine glass in Blackstone's room intrigued me. The wine had to have been poisoned, but Gaunt swore that it was harmless. He even tasted some of it himself to prove it. But then someone took the wine glass from Blackstone's room, proving that the wine had in some way contributed to Blackstone's death. If it hadn't, why go to all the trouble and risk removing it?
So William definitely was poisoned.
In a way. The poison killed him, but he really died by magic.
That's impossible.
Gaunt struggled to sit up straighter and glared at Hawk.
William was still wearing the amulet Visage made for him. It was a good amulet. I tested it myself. As long as he was wearing it, magic wouldn't work in his vicinity.
Exactly. And that's why he died.
Gaunt looked at him confusedly, and some of the fire went out of his eyes as the sedative took hold of him again. Hawk looked quickly around at the other listeners. Dormant was leaning so far forward it was a wonder he hadn't fallen off his chair. Stalker was frowning thoughtfully, and Fisher looked as though she'd brain him if he didn't get on with his story.
It was a very clever scheme. Since there was no trace of poison, if it hadn't been for Catherine's interference, we'd probably have put Blackstone's death down to natural causes. So how did he die? It all comes down to the amulet in the glass of wine. The killer took a glass of poison and worked a transformation spell on it so that it became a glass of perfectly normal wine. He then gave the glass to Blackstone. However, once Blackstone raised the glass to his lips, the amulet canceled out the transformation magic and the wine reverted to its original and deadly state. Blackstone must have died shortly after entering his bedroom. He fell to the floor, dropping the wine glass. It rolled away from the body, passed beyond the amulet's influence, and the poison became wine again, which is why Gaunt was able to taste it quite safely. Later on, the killer went back to the room and removed the wine glass. He knew a thorough examination would reveal the wine's true nature. If everything had gone according to plan and Blackstone's death had been accepted as a heart attack, he would probably have switched the original glass for another, containing normal wine. But as things were, he was no doubt pressed for time.
Ingenious.
Yes, but is it practical? Would it have worked?
Oh, yes, it would have worked. And that's why Catherine had to die. Just before Visage's death, Catherine was trying to remember who had given William that last glass of wine. She was sure she'd seen who it was, but she couldn't quite remember. She had to die because the killer was afraid she might identify him.
Right. So, we've established how William Blackstone died. Now we come to the suspects. Gaunt, Dormant, Stalker. Three suspects, but only one of you had the means and the opportunity and the motive. Gaunt could have worked the transformation spell on the wine. He knew about the amulet, and he is both a sorcerer and an alchemist. But he also had a succubus, with all the power and abilities that granted him. If he'd wanted Blackstone dead, there were any number of ways he could have managed it, without any danger of it being traced back to him. He certainly wouldn't have committed a murder in his own house. An investigation might have discovered his succubus, and he couldn't risk that. Dormant, I did wonder about you for a while. You were obviously very attached to the witch Visage, and jealousy can be a powerful motive. If you thought Blackstone was all that stood between you and her, but you know nothing about magic. You didn't even know how a truth spell worked.
Hawk turned slowly to Stalker.
It had to be you, Stalker. You worked your transformation trick on the wine once too often. Taking the alcohol out of wine was one thing. I might have overlooked that, but changing the wine to a sedative for Gaunt was a mistake. Once I'd seen that, a lot of things suddenly fell into place. I wondered why Blackstone took that last glass of wine, when he'd already said he wasn't going to drink anymore because he had no head for wine. He took that final glass because you told him you'd worked your trick on it to take out the alcohol. Also, when Visage died on the landing, you were one of the last people to leave the parlor, which meant you had plenty of time to kill Catherine while everyone else's attention was distracted. It was the lack of motive that threw me for a long time, until I discovered you were a Defarrier. Blackstone's next main cause would have been a drive against child prostitution and those who supported it. Fisher and I were working on just such a case before we were called away to go after the Chandler Lane vampire. The word was that we were called off because we were getting too close to one of the main patrons, an influential and very respectable man with a taste for abusing children. The Defarriers had a thing about children, didn't they? We'll never know exactly how many children were tortured and killed in their black magic rituals. You were the patron, Stalker. You were the one who had us called off. And that's why you had to kill Blackstone. During his investigation, he discovered your obsession with child prostitutes. And he was going to turn you over to the guard as soon as he had some concrete evidence to use against you. And he'd have found it eventually. Oh, you argued with him, promised him anything and everything, but Blackstone was an honest man. You couldn't buy him, and you couldn't intimidate him, so you killed him. You couldn't have let him tell the world what you really are. It would have destroyed your reputation and your legend, and that's all you've got left to live on. You must have put a lot of planning into Blackstone's death, Stalker. After all, you were the one who first told Visage how to make the protective amulet. Ironic, isn't it? By wearing that amulet, he was unknowingly collaborating in his own murder. If it hadn't been for Catherine, you might well have got away with it, and your dirty little secret would have been safe. Adam Stalker, I hereby place you under arrest for the murder of William and Catherine Blackstone.
For a long moment, nobody said anything.
I said you were good, didn't I? You worked it all out from beginning to end. If it hadn't been for that bitch Catherine... I forgot how tough she was. She always could think on her feet, and she was one hell of an actress. If it hadn't been for her muddying the waters, you wouldn't have suspected a thing. But it doesn't matter. I'm not going to stand trial.
Hawk threw himself sideways out of his chair as Stalker suddenly lunged forward, sword in hand. He hit the floor rolling as the sword slammed into the back of the chair where he'd been sitting. Hawk quickly got to his feet, axe in hand. Fisher was also on her feet, sword at the ready. Gaunt and dormant watched, shocked, as Stalker drew his sword, kicked aside his chair, and backed quickly away.
You've got good reflexes, Hawk, but you still don't stand a chance against me. The only one who could have stopped me is Gaunt, and my sedative's taking care of him. In a few minutes, the isolation spell will collapse, and I'll be on my way. The guard will find nothing but a house full of bodies, and I'll be long gone. This will be just another unsolved mystery. Haven's full of them.
You're not going anywhere.
Fisher lifted her sword slightly.
You think you're going to stop me, girl?
Why not? I've dealt with worse than you in my time.
Stalker smiled contemptuously and stepped forward, his long sword shining brightly as it cut through the air towards her. Fisher braced herself and parried the blow. The sword was heavy, and Stalker was every bit as strong as they said he was. She cut at his unprotected leg, and he parried the blow easily. Hawk moved in to join her, swinging his axe. Stalker picked up a chair with his free hand and threw it at Hawk. One of the chair legs struck him a glancing blow to the head. Hawk fell to the floor, stunned. Fisher threw herself at Stalker, and he stepped forward to meet her. He quickly took the advantage, and Fisher was forced to retreat around the room, blocking his sword with hers, as she searched and waited for an opening in his defense that never came. She was good with a blade, but he was better. Sparks sputtered and died on the still air, and the parlor was full of the ring of steel on steel. Hawk got to his feet and shook his head to clear it. Stalker scowled briefly. He couldn't fight them both, and he knew it. He turned suddenly and cut viciously at Dormant, who shrank back in his chair unharmed. Fisher threw herself forward to block the blow, and Stalker spun around at the last moment and kicked her solidly under the left knee. Fisher collapsed as her leg betrayed her, groaning with agony. Stalker drew back his sword to finish her. Now Hawk was upon him, swinging his axe double-handed, and Stalker had to retreat. Stalker and Hawk stood toe-to-toe, their blades a flashing blue in the lamplight. Sword and axe rose and fell, cut and parry and riposte, with no quarter asked or given. The pace was too fast for the fight to last long. Stalker tried every dirty trick and foul move he knew, but none of them worked against Hawk. In the end, he felt himself beginning to slow and grew desperate. He used the same trick once too often, and Hawk stepped inside his guard and knocked the sword from his hand. Stalker staggered back, nursing his numbed hand. He leaned against the wall.
Whew. I said you were good, Hawk. 10 years ago, you wouldn't have touched me. But that was 10 years ago. It's not really my fault, you know. You can't imagine what it was like growing up in this house, seeing the things my family did. What chance did I have? They were vile, all of them. And they tried to corrupt me, too. I couldn't stop them. I was only a child. So I ran away, and I became a hero, to help others, because there was no one to help me when I needed it. But I was tainted, full of the corruption they taught me. I fought it, oh, I fought it for years, but it was too strong, and I was too weak. I even tried to buy this house so I could burn it to the ground and break its hold on me. But Gaunt wouldn't sell it. It wasn't my fault. None of it was my fault. I didn't choose to be what I am.
I saw what you did to that girl in the brothel over the Nag's Head. I would have killed myself before I did such a thing.
Stalker nodded slowly.
I was never that brave. Till now, I told you I wouldn't stand trial.
He drew a dagger from his boot, turned it quickly in his hand, and thrust it deep into his heart. He fell to his knees, looked triumphantly at Hawk, and then fell forward and lay still. Hawk moved cautiously forward and stirred the body with his boot. There was no response. He knelt down and tried for a pulse. There wasn't one. Adam Stalker was dead.
It's over. It's finally over.
Yes.
Hawk rose slowly to his feet.
I think it is.
He looked at Fisher.
Are you all right, Isabel?
Oh, I'll live.
Fisher flexed her aching leg.
He was one of the best.
Dormant stared sadly at Stalker's body.
I never liked him, but I always admired him. He was one of the greatest heroes ever to come out of the Low Kingdoms. He really did do most of the things the legends say he did.
Yes, I know. And that's why we're going to say Hightower was responsible for all the deaths. No one really blames a werewolf. Haven needs legends like Stalker more than it needs the truth.
Dormant nodded slowly.
I suppose you're right. A man's past should be buried with the man.
There was a sudden lurch as the house seemed to drop an inch. A subtle tension in the air was suddenly gone.
The isolation spell. It's finished. Let's get the hell out of this place.
They all looked at Gaunt, sleeping peacefully in his chair.
You go on. I'll stick around till he wakes up. Someone's got to brief him on the story we're going to tell. Besides...
Dormant looked levelly at Hawk and Fisher.
I promised Visage I'd look after her. I don't want to leave her here in the company of strangers.
All right. We won't be long. What will you do now, Dormant, now that Blackstone is dead?
I'll think of something. If nothing else, I'll be able to dine out on this story for months.
Hawk and Fisher walked unhurriedly down the hall to the closed front door. Hawk hesitated a moment, and then pulled the door open. A cool breeze swept in, dispelling the heat of the long night. The sun had come up. Rain clouds scudded across the early morning skies, bringing a hint of moisture to the air. Hawk and Fisher stood together a while, quietly enjoying the cool of the breeze.
It was partly the heat. It brings out the worst in people.
Yeah, but only if the evil is there to be brought out. Come on, let's go.
They shut the door behind them, walked out of the grounds, and down the steep hill that led back into the shadowed heart of the city. Even in the early morning light, Haven is a dark city. Hawk and Fisher is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1990, Simon R. Green, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Danny Gavigan, Ren Casey, Andy Clements, David Coyne, Richard Rowan, Mort Shelby, Tim Getman, Scott McCormick, Yasmin Toison, Michael John Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nanette Savard, Casey Platt, and Colleen Delaney. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Acil Ford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Additional original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Hawk and Fisher, be sure to look for E.E. Knight's Vampire Earth series, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another thrilling title in Graphic Audio.
Have come to Earth to establish a new order. They rule the planet. They thrive on the scent of fear. And if it is night, as sure as darkness, they will come.
You fight them, right? The Kurians, the Reapers, the things they make?
Well, not all at once, son. In fact, we spend more time running scared from them than we do standing and fighting. We can hit them here and there where we don't stand too much of a chance of getting hit back. When we're not doing that, we're trying to keep from starving. Ever drunk water out of a hoof print to wash down a couple handfuls of ground-up ants? Slept outside in the rain without even a tent? Worn the same shirt for a month straight? Really stinks, son. And I don't just mean the shirt.
I'd like to join up, sir.
I knew you could talk him into it.
Those are Grogs.
They must have got wind of us last night. Not sure how many of us there are, so they're going back to report. Take a look at this freak show, Valentine. Those legworms are fun to stop, too. Brain is at the tail end, kind of like Finner here. Nothing up front but a mouth and some taste buds, I guess. Also, like Finner here, come to think of it.
We try to pick off the riders, but the lead one always has a big riot shield, thick as tank armor. One thing you do not want to ever see is about 50 of them coming at you in line abreast.
That happened at the Battle of Cedar Hill. We lost.
Ever ready. The very top of that hill. Maybe by that big windfall trunk. I think something's up there.
David, I think you're right. It's up there, but not moving. A Reaper. Hard ears, boys. This is a sound you need to know.
Madre de Dios!
Five. One for each of us. Hope that's luck, not planning.
Drop him!
No! Wait! No! Don't let him! Don't shoot!
You might as well shoot, foodlings. You'll all three be dead as soon as I take you.
Oh, God, let me go! Val, get it off me! Get it off me!
You got one thing right, foodling. I am a god.
Sorry, Gil. Hope you do the same for me.
Vampire Earth, Book 1, Way of the Wolf, Part 1. Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.